Welcome to NTD News. I'm Tiffany Meyer. Here are today's top stories. President Trump rallies in New Mexico, hoping to turn the state red for the first time since 2004. Israelis head to beaches and malls on a hot election day, the country's second election in less than 6 months. Policy experts concerned about communist China's rising influence in the UN and takeover of key positions. Hong Kong politicians reveal new information on subway police brutality incident. Some mysteries still remain. U.S. President Donald Trump was in New Mexico yesterday, rallying supporters there. He's trying to expand the electoral map for Republicans and hopes to turn the state red in 2020.
Trump reminded the crowd that it's been a while since a Republican president won New Mexico, which voted for Hillary Clinton by a margin of 8 points.
No, I think we're going to do great here. We're here for a number of reasons, but we're here because we really think we're going to turn this state and make it a Republican state.
New Mexico has not voted for a Republican in the presidential election since 2004. Trump captured 40% of the state vote in 2016, compared to the 48% that went for Hillary Clinton. New Mexico is a border state, and Trump reminded his supporters of his 2016 campaign promise to build a wall on the southern border.
We're building a lot of wall. We'll have almost 500 miles of wall built by the end of next year, and it's making a big difference.
He also weighed in on gun control after presidential candidate Beto O'Rourke proposed in the last debate mandatory buybacks of certain firearms.
As your president, I will never allow them to take away your liberty, your dignity, your Social Security. And I will never, ever allow them to take away your sacred right to keep and bear arms.
Trump's rally in Rio Rancho, an area in suburban Albuquerque, is the first stop on a 3-day fundraising tour that will also take him to 4 California cities. The fundraisers are expected to raise more than $15 million. Trump has set his sights on Wisconsin or Michigan next, swing states that he won by only a fraction in 2016.
President Trump said in a letter yesterday the U.S. and Japan have worked out initial agreements about tariffs and digital trade. In a letter to Congress released by the White House, Trump said he intends to enter into agreements on tariff barriers and digital trade in the coming weeks. Earlier this year at the G7 summit in France, Trump and his Japanese counterpart, Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, announced they had reached an agreement regarding agricultural and industrial tariffs. Trump tweeted at the time, "Big trade deal will be great for our farmers, ranchers, and more." For Trump, the signing of even a partial trade deal with Japan, centered largely on agriculture, would provide some relief to U.S. farmers who have been battered by a 14-month U.S.-China trade war and lost market share. The two sides said they expected to sign the deal at the U.N. General Assembly in New York this month. Trump's letter to Congress said that the United States would pursue further fair and reciprocal trade negotiations with Japan. With the letter, the signing can now move forward. Israelis flock to malls and sandy beaches today, enjoying the hot weather on Election Day. Meanwhile, over 600 polling stations have opened in army bases across Israel since Saturday, allowing soldiers to cast ballots over several days.
Opinion polls put former Armed Forces Chief Benny Gantz's centrist Blue and White Party neck and neck with Netanyahu's right-wing Likud Party. Polls also suggest the far-right Yisrael Beitenu Party could emerge as kingmaker in coalition talks. "The election is close. I can confirm to you this morning they are very close. I call on all citizens of Israel to come and vote." The two main parties' campaigns in Israel's second parliamentary election in 5 months point to only narrow differences on many important issues: the regional struggle against Iran, ties with the Palestinians and the U.S., and the stable economy. An end to the Netanyahu era, the longest of any Israeli prime minister, would be unlikely to lead to a big change in policy on hotly disputed issues.
"I feel secure. It's the best time for Israel ever, economically, securely. We have the best time in our lives. Everyone is shopping, is traveling around the world, buying new cars. We don't need change.
While some residents are asking for a change.
I think the state of Israel, just as the rest of the world, is at a crossroads. We're at a moment in which there is regional confrontation, there's climate collapse coming, and I think we need new leadership.
President Trump has worked side by side with Netanyahu on cornerstone issues, like the U.S. recognition of the Golan Heights as part of Israel. But he didn't say his friend would have an easy election.
Well, certainly he has a good chance, but it's a very, you know, it's a 50-50 election. A lot of people, if you look at the polls and everything else, is going to be very close. So we'll see what happens. Polls are often wrong.
The election was called after Netanyahu failed to form a coalition following an April election. The Likud and Blue and White were tied, with each taking 35 of the 120 seats in the Knesset, or parliament.
The 74th UN General Assembly opens in New York today, and U.S. foreign policy experts are warning of China's influence on the United Nations. They say it's been rising dramatically in recent years, which could distort the UN's values and directly undermine American interests.
The 74th UN General Assembly opened Tuesday in New York. Since 2019, China has become the second largest contributor to the UN's regular budget. China is also the second largest contributor to the UN peacekeeping budget and provides more personnel to peacekeeping operations than any other permanent member of the Security Council. Among the 15 specialized agencies of the UN, Chinese nationals are in charge of four.
This is a concern to the United States. It should be of concern to other countries too, because China does not share the values or support the principles of the organization as established in the UN Charter.
The United Nations was established by the United States and other allied powers after World War II. The mission includes to maintain international peace and security, protect human rights, and uphold international law. The universal values it upholds are clearly incompatible with China's authoritarian ideology, so China has been trying to influence and reshape the institution.
In the Human Rights Council, China has worked very hard to try and undermine the system of accountability for human rights violations, and they're very strongly pressing this notion that countries need to deal with human rights situations on a national basis through cooperative effort rather than through independent standards or global standards.
Experts also pointed out that China has been striving to increase the number of Chinese nationals serving in the UN and asking them to openly support Beijing's policies, such as the Belt and Road Initiative. Participation in UN peacekeeping operations has also become a way for Beijing to train its army officers and protect its economic and political interests overseas.
It's about time that we focus more on it, that it be more of an integral part of our China strategy that is dealing with China's influence in international organizations.
Reporting by Kitty Wong, NTD News.
Vaping has now led to the death of a seventh person in the U.S. It's the second death in California linked to vaping. Now, the CDC has activated its Emergency Operations Center in response to e-cigarette use.
It's supposed to be a healthy alternative to cigarettes, right? Well, it turns out it's a killer.
Illinois Senator Dick Durbin, one of several senators demanding online marketplaces like eBay, Craigslist, and Alibaba stop selling e-cigarettes and vaping products to teens, calling eBay's response to remove the products, quote, lackluster at best.
5 million high school students across the United States are using vaping products.
Lung disease cases linked to vaping in 36 states have prompted the CDC to activate its Emergency Operations Center, which will help strengthen the response to the health threat vaping is causing across the U.S.
That's how serious this conversation is.
California, one of the six states with vaping-related deaths, is now imposing stricter age verification requirements for tobacco products sold online or by mail, and is launching a $20 million digital and social media campaign aimed at educating people about the dangers of vaping.
We're going to focus our marketing campaigns targeting this epidemic of vaping.
No more counting ballots with barcodes in Colorado. That's according to a new plan announced Monday by state officials designed to combat security concerns that surround voting technology. Ballots show how a person voted, while receipts show a barcode or a QR code. Those codes are easily scanned and tallied, but the human eye cannot read them. Some experts argue paper ballots are needed to double-check a count and ensure its accuracy. Colorado says its new voting machines will print out paper ballots instead of receipts, starting in 2021. In Hong Kong, a legislative council member and leader of the Civic Party disclosed details of a document showing discrepancies in log entries made by the fire department on August 31st, when police beat and arrested passengers inside a train station. NTD's Jeremy Sandberg spoke with council members to find out their main concerns.
On August 31st, police entered Prince Edward train station and were seen using pepper spray and beating passengers with their batons, leaving several citizens hurt and bloodied. Alvin Young, leader of the Civic Party and a member of the Legislative Council, says the log first shows authorities counted 9 or 10 casualties at the start of the incident and reported these numbers to the hospital so arrangements could be made accordingly. Casualties refers to serious injuries. The log shows 3 as red, which included head injuries.
And then all of a sudden, after 25 to 35 minutes of silence, the counts drop from 10 to 7, and 3 serious injuries patients were suddenly gone. So what had happened? We do not know. It's up to the government to clarify.
Another important point brought out was that the log has been changed.
We can see from the log that there were changes made on either the 3rd of September or the 10th of September. We do not know to what extent did the logs got amended or got changed. We can only see that some changes were made. It's up to the government, in fact, the fire department, police department, to explain to Hong Kong people what had happened.
Rumors have been spreading that some may have even lost their lives that night, with citizens building a shrine outside the station, leaving flowers and offerings for the victims.
If they fail to disclose those information, I strongly believe that the general public will still cast a serious doubt on the incident. And the credibility of the police force and the government will be undermined further.
We're just asking questions, and it's up to the government to clarify with the public.
Democratic lawmakers are urging the government to conduct an independent investigation into the police force. Many citizens find it suspicious and incriminating that the MTR won't release unedited footage of what happened inside Prince Edward Station on August 31st and that press were made to leave. Certainly, releasing the footage would put an end to the allegations and theories circulating and put a definite conclusion on what happened that night, putting public concern to rest. Jeremy Sandberg, NTD News, Hong Kong.
Hong Kong's leader saying she is disappointed with the credit rating given by Moody's after it changes outlook on the city from stable to negative.
Lam spoke to reporters Tuesday, saying Moody's decision was disappointing and insisting that Hong Kong's fundamentals remain robust. Moody's said in a statement that the longer the standoff continues, the greater the risk that Hong Kong's attractiveness as a global economic and financial center would be diminished. It is the second agency to make the move, after Fitch Ratings. Following months of pro-democracy protests, Lam announced she would meet people from all walks of life to listen to their views, starting next week. Many protesters have said the dialogues are meaningless if the government refuses to accept their demands. The city's reputation has likely been tarnished, not just by the protests, but also by what many view as the government's slow response to the crisis and excessive police violence. In the same news conference, Lam said that international public relations firms have turned down the government's requests to help restore the city's reputation.
But sooner or later, we will have to do it because I have every confidence in Hong Kong's fundamentals.
She didn't give details on the firms or when they were approached.
Hong Kong singer and activist Denise Ho is testifying with Joshua Wong and other activists in Washington today to call on U.S. lawmakers and businesses to criticize Beijing's actions in Hong Kong.
Hong Kong celebrity activist Denise Ho is calling on the U.S. to stand up to Beijing. The singer heads to Congress Tuesday to testify with fellow activist Joshua Wong, known for his role in the 2014 Umbrella Movement. They'll join other activists to urge U.S. businesses and lawmakers to support human rights and democracy in the Chinese-ruled city. Hong Kong has faced more than 100 days of escalating protests. Ho told Reuters on Monday the demonstrations are a fight for humanity.
I believe that Hong Kong is in the front lines of this very global fight for humanity itself. And also, the victory or the fall of Hong Kong would also consequentially mean a victory for humanity or the fall of humanity. So I call for the attention of, you know, global communities worldwide to be aware of these situations.
Democratic leader Chuck Schumer has said addressing China's actions in Hong Kong will be a top priority next week when Congress returns to work. Lawmakers are already working on a bill that sets a yearly review of Hong Kong's special treatment from Washington. Right now, it gets trade and business privileges from the U.S. The new bill would also direct the president to slap sanctions on Hong Kong and Chinese officials who undermine the city's autonomy. China denies allegations it's meddled in the protest. It also says Hong Kong is an internal affair. Beijing has in turn accused the U.S. and Britain of inciting unrest in the city.
The price of China's pork went up nearly 50% in August, according to new data released by the Chinese regime, and prices are predicted to go up further before the end of the year. Pork prices soared 46.7% after an increase of 27% in July as African swine fever decimates the country's herds. Most analysts expect pork prices to continue rising as supply plummets, spilling over into prices of other food items. Meanwhile, analysts expect more pain for Chinese exporters in upcoming months, with more U.S. tariff measures set to take effect on October 15th and December 15th. Deputy-level talks between Washington and Beijing are set to resume on Thursday, paving the way for high-level talks in October. Up next, the UK Supreme Court hears arguments on Boris Johnson's suspension of Parliament. That and more when we return. An unprecedented legal battle begins. A challenge to the British Prime Minister's decision to suspend Parliament reached the UK Supreme Court today. NTD's Jane Werrell reports from London.
Johnson suspended Parliament last Tuesday. The length and timing of the suspension has proved controversial. Johnson maintains he is following the convention of suspending Parliament before setting out a policy agenda as new Prime Minister. Businesswoman and anti-Brexit campaigner Gina Miller, who is appealing at the Supreme Court, argues it's an unlawful abuse of power. Last week, there were two contradictory rulings on the suspension. Scotland's highest civil court said the Prime Minister's advice to the Queen to suspend Parliament was unlawful, and it was done with an improper motive of stymieing Parliament. In contrast, London's High Court ruled it lawful, saying the suspension was a political matter and not a matter for the courts. 11 judges are hearing both appeals at the Supreme Court. There are significant differences between the judges in the Supreme Court in the US and the UK. The government in the UK is minimally involved in selecting judges.
The judges in this country are extremely keen to stay out of the political debate. They're not elected. They have no mandate. They are there to interpret and apply the law, but not to interfere in the political realm. It's the same with the Queen, actually. So it's almost, I mean, it is basically the same.
A ruling from the Supreme Court is expected later in the week. A Brexit deal has not yet been reached with the EU. Johnson says he's cautiously optimistic about a deal and that Brexit talks will intensify. But the October 31st deadline is fast approaching. Jane Worrell, NTD News, London.
South Korea's farms are on high alert after the first case of swine fever was found there. Now, officials hope to avoid the fate of China, where hundreds of millions of hogs could be lost.
South Korea is on high alert after discovering its first case of swine fever. The deadly disease was discovered at a pig farm near its border with North Korea. Concerns had been high with the fever raging through China's hog population. Back in Seoul, the government promised swift action.
The Ministry of Agriculture, Food and Rural Affairs immediately raised the alert level for Africa swine fever to its highest level as soon as it was confirmed.
South Korea has imposed a nationwide ban on the movement of pigs while it looks for the source of the virus. About 4,000 will be culled to help stop it spreading. Officials want to avoid China's fate. Experts say it could lose more than half of its 360 million pigs due to disease or culling. There's concern around the region too with the reports of outbreaks in Vietnam and the Philippines. That has shoppers in Manila spooked.
Sales were badly hit because the impression people get from media reports is really strong. People see swine fever news on TV, then they believe all the pork in the market is infected. But I assure them that it's not the case because we have a certificate direct from the pig dealer.
Swine fever poses no danger to humans, but pork is the most popular meat in much of Asia. The average South Korean eats 27 kilos of it every year. Any shortage or any spike in prices will go down very badly.
Up next, Jamaica successfully restoring its coral reefs, reversing devastation. Find out how when we return. The Solomon Islands government has voted to sever its more than three decades of relations with Taiwan and take up diplomatic ties with Beijing instead.
On Monday, the Solomon Islands cabinet voted to drop its ties with Taiwan in favor of Beijing. 27 voted for the switch, while 6 abstained.
I know that it was also very difficult for many members of your government trying to stand up very bravely support our friendship and our relations.
The move came after a months-long review in the Solomon Islands, looking at the pros and cons of switching its diplomatic ties to Beijing, which is offering $8.5 million in development funds to replace support from Taiwan. China and Taiwan have fought a tug-of-war for diplomatic recognition in the South Pacific for decades, as Beijing secures allies from self-ruled democratic Taiwan. Beijing considers Taiwan a wayward province with no right to state-to-state ties. Following the decision, the Taiwanese flag can be seen in video footage being lowered on the island's embassy in the capital of the Solomon Islands.
Jamaica's decimated coral reefs are on the comeback. Efforts by locals are reversing undersea devastation.
After a series of natural and man-made disasters in the 1980s and 1990s, Jamaica lost 85% of its once bountiful coral reefs. Many scientists thought that most of Jamaica's coral reef had been permanently replaced by seaweed, but the coral and tropical fish are slowly reappearing, thanks in part to a series of careful interventions.
We've taken corals from the wild, and we break them into tiny pieces, and then each tiny piece grows into a new coral. So we're basically cloning them.
They had to overcome obstacles like waste being dumped in the water and convincing fishermen to change when and where they fished. At some point, the fishermen realized that they weren't catching as many fish and that preserving the reef was in their best interest.
Jamaica was the hotbed for coral reef research in the 70s and 80s. And after some of the decline, a lot of the international scientific community abandoned Jamaica. Well, the Jamaicans couldn't abandon Jamaica because that was their coral reef.
Slowly, the comeback effort is gaining momentum. More than a dozen grassroots-run coral nurseries and fish sanctuaries have sprung up in the past decade, supported by grants from foundations, local businesses such as hotels and scuba clinics, and the Jamaican government.
Arnold Schwarzenegger has shared the first image from Kung Fury 2. The legendary actor is playing the president in the highly anticipated sequel.
Arnold Schwarzenegger looks completely at home in the Oval Office, feet up on the desk, cigar in hand. But Arnie isn't standing for an election. He's filming Kung Fury 2, a new martial arts comedy romp starring and directed by David Sandberg. The movie is based on Sandberg's 2015 short film and as well as Schwarzenegger's turn as president. The plot will see Michael Fassbender, Alexandra Shipp, and David Hasselhoff in a wild mashup between kung fu, police action, and time-traveling Nazis. Off-screen, Schwarzenegger was real-life governor of California from 2003 to 2011 and is best known for his roles in the Terminator series of films.
And that's all for now. Join us again this evening for your NTD News. I'm Tiffany Meyer.